Hi folks, welcome back to Introducing AI. My name is Martin Kern. I'm joined this week by Bianca Fatrona. Hi Bianca, how are you?
Hi, very well, thank you, Martin.
Good.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I believe we're going to be talking about deep learning and neural networks and all the kind of science and maths and stuff that sits behind AI this week.
Yeah, that's correct. So we're going to do an introduction to deep learning, see what it's all about, and then we're going to look at some of the maths behind it as
Excellent.
Well.
I'm not very good at maths. It took me 3 attempts to pass maths at school, so hopefully I'm going to learn something this week.
Yeah, we're just going to cover it in a high-level detail, so it's not going to be loads of maths, but hopefully it's going to give everyone a better overview about what deep learning is about and
Fantastic.
What a neural network is.
Excellent, okay.
So, cool, so let's get going.
Let's get going, yeah.
So I wanted to start this presentation actually talking about artificial intelligence because deep learning is an important piece of the artificial intelligence conversation. And most importantly, I wanted to make the difference between two different types of artificial intelligence. I don't know if you're familiar with the terms weak AI and strong AI?
A little bit.
A little bit, great. So this is actually a very important key distinction. Weak AI is about systems that are very specialized on expertise domain, so they can do one thing very, very well.
Okay.
If you take it a little bit further, it's about mimicking human intelligence rather than being a consciousness in the mind itself.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it's kind of helping humans do things that they already do rather than being a human.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's like a great concise like summary of it. And then strong AI is more about this general knowledge, being an expert, actually creating a mind. And that's what we typically refer to as general artificial intelligence.
Okay.
So if I give you an example, you know, there's a lot of talk in the markets about bots.
Yeah.
So a lot of the chatbots, we typically will refer to them as weak AI.
Okay.
And then if we look at the bigger AI story, we'll speak about strong AI.
So which one's Terminator?
Strong AI would
strong
be like
AI.
Terminator.
Okay. So
yeah,
all the movies, that's strong AI.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah,
cool.
It's like very strong AI. Okay. And that's why I put on the slides the cute robot as being weak AI, because it's about like helping people do very specialized tasks. And what the strong AI is, that more idea of broad general knowledge. And the reason I wanted to show the distinction is because nowadays we do have this specialized system. We do have weak AI. And with a lot of the technology and state-of-the-art research, we're moving into this idea of strong AI.
Right.
And I personally believe that deep learning might be one of the avenues that's going to take us there.
So deep learning is like a facet of AI. It's a technique or technology. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's just part of it.
Okay.
Cool. So let's get going. Yeah. So what is deep learning? Deep learning is an area of machine learning. So you've heard of machine learning before, right?
Yeah. We've got a whole session on machine learning, I think, as part of this series.
Perfect. That's brilliant. So deep learning is a part of that. But it's also, we typically refer to deep learning as deep neural network. So neural network is a type of algorithm that we use in machine learning. And it's about the numbers of layers that this network have. And also the complexity of architecture. And this is going to become clear in a second where we're actually going to look at what a neural network is and how we define the
neural network. So it sounds like something that's like, sounds like your brain. Is there some connection between deep learning and the way the brain works?
So at a very functional level, so one, we call them neurons. So each neural network has these cells that we call them neurons or perceptrons or just computational nodes, and they're inspired by the way the brain works. They have some bunch of inputs and then a bunch of outputs, and then the computation is going on in the cell. So conceptually and functionally, it's very similar.
Okay, great. Cool.
Cool. So before we deep dive into the math and the graphs, I wanted to tell you and our viewers a little bit about the history of neural network, because I think it's very, very important. I don't know if you're aware, but we're actually in the third wave of neural networks.
I was not aware of that.
So there have been two waves before.
I only found out there's a thing called the neural network 5 minutes ago. So.
Okay. So it's good to look at the history, because I think it shows that this technology is definitely not new, but it's good to know what makes this third wave more special. Okay. So actually, neural network, the first neural network computer model was came about in the 40s.
Right.
So a very long time ago, right?
Yeah.
So and then after this computing model, Rosenblatt came up with the idea of a perceptron. So a perceptron is in a way one unit of computation. So we're going to look at that into more detail.
Okay.
And it does some of that computation. So it's able to automatically learn a couple of weights to solve some problems.
Okay.
And then also in the 60s, we had another type of system that was called Adeline. And that's different from a perceptron, which is more software based in the sense that this was made of analog systems, and it was able to solve problems and solve the least mean square error problems as well. So this was a pure analog. So if you think of a bunch of circuits that were able to learn.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And this was all part of the first stage of neural network that came into the end in 1969 with Minsky and Papert's book that they basically absolutely destroy, if you per se, the perceptron. They show a lot of its limitation and how we can not be used to solve this idea of a general artificial intelligence.
Okay.
So, and
so
that's
it's really all, quite old. It's been around a long time then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a lot of people don't really know that. So that's quite interesting. So there's a point in 69, we say that the first wave of neural network came to an end and a lot of people lost interest in the area. And then in the 70s, it started picking up again.
Right.
So in the 70s, Weierbrod introduced this, the backpropagation algorithm, which is an algorithm we use today. And I'm going to present it shortly, where we learn how to train this neural network algorithms.
Okay.
And that was, in a way, the breakthrough that led to the second wave of neural networks. Which was in the 80s. So we started in the 80s. We had new interest, a lot of new conferences, a lot of funding came about. And then it dropped back down in the 90s.
Okay.
And the reason it dropped back down is because we found that a lot of different other techniques in machine learning were much better than neural networks at the time to solve very specific problems. So stuff like support vector machines and other types of algorithm.
Okay. So there is a difference between machine learning and neural networks, because people might think that those terms are like, they mean the same thing. They don't quite mean the same thing.
So yeah, deep learning is a subset of machine learning. So machine learning, it's about using this different algorithm to solve, in a way, to build predictive models that are going to tell you something about, we say the future, but that's quite general broad definition. And deep learning is one part of that. So it's one specific type of algorithm, and we have other ones in machine learning.
So it's a type of machine learning algorithm, effectively.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Cool. Great.
Yeah, awesome. So that's how the second wave ended. And now since 2012, we started looking at neural networks again. And that's since 2012, we made ridiculously, like, fascinating progress. So I'm absolutely, like, every day there's a new paper, something else going on in the industry.
So what's triggered that progress recently then? Why are we making such good progress now?
Oh, so that's a brilliant question. So back in 2012, so in academia, there's this thing that's called the ImageNet competition. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
So is this idea that you have millions of images and I think there are around 2,000 categories, objects, category of objects that you can identify in those images.
Okay.
And people in academia compete every year for the best machine learning model that's able to recognize those images.
So everyday objects and photos.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Like house dogs, airplanes, so on and so forth. And in 2012, a neural network-based algorithm won the competition and absolutely decreased smash the record rate. So that's why people starting having more and more interest in this sort of algorithms and techniques.
So for people that have used our cognitive services, they might have seen the computer vision API. That's based on a neural network algorithm.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
I don't know the specific, but I do believe so because it looks, it's in the same.
Cool. Okay,
so
good.
Cool. Okay, so let's get started. What is a neural network? So I think you can really visualize neural networks by looking at an image, and that's how a lot of people understand. That's how I started understanding it as well. So if we look at the slides, we have this idea of an input layer and an output layer, and everything in the neural network is represented as like a bubble of computation per se. So the input layer is actually the data you put through, so that would be your data points or your data set, and what you get out is the thing you're trying to classify. So the best way to understand this is with an example, right? So let's say, do you like cats?
I'm more of a dog person, actually, but for the sake of demo, I'll say yes.
No, it's fine. So let's say we have a bunch of images of the internet and we want to detect if there's a cat or a dog in that image or none of it, right?
Okay.
So we're trying to identify three classes, right?
Yeah.
Cat, dog, and none of the above, per se. So what we will do, if we're going to apply that to a neural network, is that each pixel of the image that would pass through will be one of the nodes in our input layer.
Okay.
Right. So imagine you have a 28 by 28 image. We have 784 inputs, right,
okay,
in the input layer.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the output layer will be three different, like, small little bubbles as well.
Or nothing,
right. And sort of the magic is going on in the middle in what we call hidden layers. And in the hidden layers, we have computational nodes. We call them neurons or perceptrons, and that's where all the computation is actually happening.
Okay. So what are those nodes actually doing
though? That's a great question. And that sort of moves on to the next slide. So every single unit is what we would call the single neuron model.
Yeah.
And there's sort of two stages in every single neuron. I'm going to summarize that very well. And if you were to take anything out of this presentation, and is this the extension, I would really love it, this to be the key takeaway. So what we do in one single unit of computation is that we take our inputs, we multiply them by some weights.
Okay.
Yeah, we add something that's called the bias unit, and we typically do that just for some mathematic purposes.
Yeah.
And then we, after that multiplication, we sum everything together.
Okay.
And then we pass that through a function that we call an activation function. So if we look at the graph, it's very, very easy to see. So you have your input, you multiply that by some weights, then you have something that in the purposes of this image we call Z. And then we put that Z through an activation function, which in this case is the sigmoid function.
Okay.
And I also added a small graph of the sigmoid function so you see how it looks. And it has a very interesting property in the fact that you can put any real number through the sigmoid function and you get an answer back between 0 and 1.
Okay.
So that is actually, if you think about it from a probabilistic terms, is the probability of 1 giving the parameters we put for the model.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, so that's sort of one of the unit of computation, and inside of a neural network you can have hundreds of them or thousands.
Okay.
So that's sort of what's going on in.
Great, okay.
Yeah.
So you do this for each one of those pixels in the image of the cat.
Yeah, so each pixel is going to be one, like X, so it's going to be one of the input features.
Yeah.
And for every single like node of computation, we're going to have all the pixels going through
all
the times. And that's what we call the fully connected neural network,
okay.
i.e. every single node is connected to all the inputs and all the outputs on the other side.
So you can see why this stuff takes so much computation power
exactly.
as well. And I guess the advent of the cloud and the advent of these very powerful computers is what's making this more accessible now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just imagine how much computation you have to do all of these matrix multiplications and functions. If you have two layers, it's easy, but think if you have like hundreds or something. And that's actually what we're getting on now. And actually Microsoft Research has a paper and the system, I think they're the biggest neural network that we have. It has either 154 or 156 layers.
Right.
I always forget, so it's around those lines. And that's a lot of layers, right?
Yeah.
And imagine every single layer has, I don't know, tens or hundreds of computation nodes. And that's a lot of power that you need to come through.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. So just to summarize, one of these bubbles, so one neuron is made up of two operations, right?
Right.
And that's sort of key because if you remember this, you're going to be able to much easier use all the tooling that's out there available to build neural networks. So there's two stages of this. One of them, we call it the multiply, so the matrix multiplication phase, where you multiply all the inputs by the weights and then you sum them together. And then the next step is the activation function, so where you get the result of the multiplication. You put it through one of the functions, one of the non-linearities of your choice.
Okay.
Cool.
Right. Yeah.
Makes sense. Awesome. So you might be asking, okay, I sort of understand how one of the neuron is represented. But how do we train these networks, right? So the key point when we say a neural network is learning, what we actually do is we figure out the weights that we talked about,
the more
optimized weights in order to classify the image correctly, for example,
right?
So how do we find those optimal weights?
I have no idea.
Great, that's what we're here to figure out. So we do that using a technique called backpropagation.
Okay.
And this is the thing I mentioned when we talked about and we looked at the history of neural network that was actually invented in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
So we still use that today. And backpropagation, I'm going to cover it at a very high level. So what you actually do is that you actually initialize the network with some weights. And there are different techniques that you can pick those weights from. But just imagine you have some initial weights. And then from every single image, you basically put the values of those pixels through. So backpropagation is composed of two stages. The first one is the propagation stage.
Okay.
So you take your data points and then you propagate that value through the network, right? So you go to the first layer, second layer, third layer, how many you have, up until you reach the end, right?
Yep.
So as you reach the end, you actually look at the label of your image and say, was it a cat, was it a dog, was it none of them? And you calculate the error as you reach the end. And you calculate this error looking at a loss function. So that's what we call it, a function to figure out how big the error is.
Okay.
And once we figure out that loss function, we propagate that back. So that's the backward step.
Right.
We propagate that error flowing back through the network. And then we push that through an optimization step. And that gives us an update for our weight. So we're basically going back and trying to correct that error by varying the weights.
Okay, right. That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and that we can do this step hundreds and hundreds of time until we get some very optimized weights.
Okay.
Cool. So let's recap. What is deep learning? Deep learning is an area of machine learning.
Yeah.
And we typically refer to deep learning as deep neural network.
Yeah.
A network is deep if he has more than two layers, so three or more, or it has a very complex architecture. And we're going to actually look at a different type of neural network architecture to see what the differences can be.
So what's a network that has less than two layers? And
it's just a neural network. Yeah, a shallow network.
Okay.
Yeah, you can call it that. And I really wanted to point out that this is an unofficial definition that it doesn't belong to any textbook. It's more of a, that's what the industry considers now. Who knows, in 2 years we might have a deep neural network is a network with more than 100 layers just because we're much better training than back then. So the next thing I wanted to touch upon is convolutional neural network, and this is just a different type of neural network and a different type of architecture.
Okay.
And this is mostly applied to images. And as you pointed out before, if you have an image just 28 by 28 pixels, and that's a very poor quality image, right?
Yeah.
You need to do a lot of computation. So these networks are highly inefficient. And if you think about the way the neural network works, you're actually looking at every single picture in that image, right?
Yeah.
Every single pixel in that image. So if you have a cat, it might not be in the center of your image. You might have a cat next to a car, next to a tree. And it's not very good at localizing if you use just a fully connected case. You're just looking at the broad, the general, the global view of the image. So that's what convolutional network is trying to address. It's trying to extract local features from your image and trying to classify more at a local level.
Okay.
And if you think about it, that's very similar to how vision works for humans.
Yeah.
So just imagine when you look at something and you're trying to identify, you're actually focusing on the object of your attention, right?
Even though you actually could see it much bigger.
Yeah, you sort of have an external vision, but when you're saying, oh, that's a table, you actually focus on that table and everything around is blurred. So in a way, that's what convolutional network are trying to do.
Okay.
So very similar to before, we start with an input image, but we introduce two new types of layers. So we have something we call the convolutional layer. The convolutional layer is in charge of extracting different features from that image.
So a feature would be, in an image, it might be a table, a chair, a glass of water.
So so that's actually in the further layers, but think about it more of general feature like an edge right?
Oh, I see. Okay,
Age
yeah.
or shadows or
Yeah.
like different colors, that
Yeah.
sort of thing.
Okay.
Lines or squares or circles, and
Sure.
that's how you typically deal with in the first layers.
Right.
And as you're moving forward to different layers, you start having more complex shapes.
Okay, yeah.
That's how it intuitively works in the background.
Yeah, okay.
And after the convolution layer, the second layer we're introducing, it's something we call the max pooling layer, and this is all about extracting the most important features. Rather than all the features, you're just extracting the ones that make the biggest difference.
Okay.
And then you can use this layers multiple times, but at the end of each convolution network, you have this idea of the fully connected layer, and that's the layer we saw before. That's connected all the inputs from the previous layer and all the outputs from the next layer.
Okay.
And then we have a soft max layer case that does the classification at the end. And soft max is very similar. Remember the sigmoid function we
Yeah.
looked at with the probabilities between 0 and 1? Rather than just having two, like one parameter there, we'll have multiple, and that's what we call
Okay.
a soft max function. So you might have questions, I'm assuming, about what a convolution layer actually
Sure,
does.
okay.
And that's what we're going to cover next. So convolution layer, very similar with image processing. Have you looked at image processing before, for example?
Not in detail,
Not
no.
in detail. So typically when you do an image processing task, you have this idea of filters, and then you
Okay.
apply the filters on top of image on top of an image, and
Yeah.
that's how you extract different features. So if you do edge detection, for example, you use a very a specialized filter that will extract the edges in your image.
Okay.
So similarly, in convolutional layers, we have this idea of a kernel, and you apply the kernel on top of that image. And after you apply the kernel, we have this idea of a feature map,
Okay.
right? So the kernel is like, think about it as a matrix.
Right.
We typically use 3x3 or 5x5,
Okay.
and when we say we apply that on top of an image, we just basically multiply. So we multiply the first position in the kernel, let's say the first
Yeah.
pixel, and so on and so forth, and then we add them together. The visual representation is actually very good because you see you just apply it on top, and then you multiply, you add that multiplication, and that will result in your feature map.
Okay, right.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so we can actually have multiple feature maps, and we have different parameters we can optimize for here. So this kernel, as I say, can be 3x3, 5x5, 7x7. The most commonly used one are actually 3x3 or 5x5.
Okay.
This is mostly because people have been experimenting with this sort of kernels, and they found out that these two sizes are the best.
Okay.
And what you can actually do is something that we call stride. And stride is how many pixels do you jump when you apply that kernel, right?
Okay,
So
right.
if you imagine, if you start from the top left corner, and the top left corner of your kernel is going to be there.
Yeah.
And then what do you just move it by
Move
one
on across it,
pixel
yeah.
or two or three and so
Yeah.
on and so forth? And
Yeah.
that's how you do it. And you can also do padding across. So
Okay.
rather than starting with the corner, you start with the center of the kernel
Yeah.
on the first pixel,
Okay.
and you pad that across. So there's
Yeah.
a couple of things we can look to optimize
Sure.
here as well.
And what's the benefit of having that striping? Is that just so it reduces the computational load?
Yes,
Yeah.
so it will reduce the computational layer. You might want to, because if it's too close together, you might also extract the feature multiple times
Right.
as well. So yeah, that's the
Okay.
sort of idea. So a lot of the things we do in neural networks is experiment to see how it goes, and then change the architecture again, and
Yeah.
trying to optimize for the best stride, for example. That's a thing you can look at when you're
Okay.
trying to figure out the best architecture as well.
Right, cool.
Cool. So the next layer is the max pooling layer. So the max pooling layer is, if you think about it, similar to the kernel, you have a 2x2 or a 3x3 or a
Yeah.
4x4 part of that
Yeah.
image. And in that part of the image, you basically just take the maximum.
Maximum, what's the maximum?
The maximum number, because all of this, like everything in pixels or all the computation you go
Yeah.
through, it's essentially just numbers, right? So
Okay.
you just take the maximum
Yeah.
number in that part of the feature map.
Okay.
And what that actually does, if you think about it from just a high level perspective, is that it extracts the most important features,
Right, I see.
right?
Yeah.
Right. So every single feature maps, once you apply convolution on top of it, what it's going to do is just extract some
Yeah.
stuff, and you can have multiple ones, and that's what the network actually learns. It learns the best kernels to apply on top of that image.
Right. Okay.
It's like, what features do we need to extract from this image to identify a cat, for example?
Yeah.
Maybe you have a tail, I don't know, ears, sure. eyes, that sort yeah. of thing. And that's why that's what the network learns automatically. And that's what we used to do by hand before we had neural networks.
Right.
We used to define these sort of features, edges, shapes, and put that through just a regular machine learning classifier to do those type of jobs.
Okay.
But now with neural networks, it sort of does it for you automatically.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Awesome. So that was... a very, very quick overview of convolutional neural networks and just normal neural networks. Do you have any questions or do you think it's clear?
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah. That's always good to hear. So I know I've talked about the three waves in neural network, but I wanted to also touch upon the applications of deep neural networks because they are very, very good, the three main applications. And those are image processing, speech recognition, and machine translation.
Okay.
So in this three area, in the past, I don't know, 5 to 4 years, we had big breakthroughs using this algorithm in those three key areas. And what we call is that we're doing better than an average adult human would do.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're familiar, but something that's been really interesting for me maybe 2 months ago, so that it is pushing forward, a group of academics, I can't remember the university, but I read about this. What they're actually doing is that they train a neural network to read lips.
Okay.
So just imagine you have this neural network is looking at video, and without any audio, it's able to read. To tell you what you're saying.
That's amazing, yeah.
That's amazing, right? And it's doing better in their human because apparently humans are not very good at doing that. So you actually need a lot of training yourself if you're...
Because every sound, every syllable has its own lip movement, I guess.
Yes, exactly. But neural networks apparently can do that. So
I
guess we're expecting a lot of more breakthroughs.
That's quite scary implications, I have to say, isn't it?
I know, right? You just don't...
Yeah.
Yeah, but... I was talking to someone about it, and they said, imagine how good that would be, for example, for applications for, like, deaf people or blind people as well. You just have a computer being able to read lips rather than the audio stream as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it can have some interesting implication. Great. So now let's talk about tooling.
Okay.
So what can you use out there to start experimenting with deep learning and getting some interesting models and application? And there's a lot of tools, even though I don't think everyone is aware of them. So there's a lot of open source tool. At Microsoft, we have one that's called CNTK. So that's the Cognitive Toolkit.
Okay.
It is open source on GitHub.
Right.
And it allows you to use, I think it's both C++ and Python. It has Python bindings to create these neural network architectures.
Right.
Other ones that are very familiar are Caffe and Theano are, for example, the oldest ones that they've been around for a long time.
Okay.
And they've been open source as well. Caffe, I think, was written at Berkeley.
Right.
And then has been open source for the community. Theano is another framework that can be used in Python.
Okay.
Chainer is another very interesting one, and it's Python as well. Torch is in Lua.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard of Lua before. Yeah. It's this new lightweight programming language for IoT type of scenario, typically.
Right.
So Torch is the deep learning framework associated with that network. And then TensorFlow is the Google deep learning framework version for that. And then I think there's two more that I really want to mention because those are very, very interesting for beginners. And those are Lasagna and Keras.
Okay. I love these names.
I know. It's like makes you like really
like
want
JavaScript
to.
Like
yeah,
these. Yeah,
exactly. So Lasagna and Keras are actually abstraction levels on top of the deep learning framework we talked before. So Keras is on top of both Theano and TensorFlow, and Lasagna is on top of Theano. And they just provide an abstract level interface to make it even easier for you to build your own deep learning architecture.
Like an SDK always.
Yeah. Okay. Like an SDK on top of the SDK. Yeah, yeah. But it's sort of easy. You essentially just say, I want a network with 3 convolutional layer followed by a max pooling layer, and that's it.
Okay.
And then that's sort of you run the computation graph, and yeah. then you get the trained model at the end.
Okay, so it sounds easy.
Yeah,
what's there's all the fuss about?
It's I think it's a lot of experimentation. It's a different way yeah. of thinking, and you do. It takes a long time for you to deal with the weights and how you optimize different parameters, but it's very easy to get started and okay. start experimenting.
Great.
Cool. So the next thing I wanted to actually talk about and give a brief demo of is looking at deep learning scenario. Yeah. So I don't know if you're familiar with the MNIST dataset.
No.
No, that's a very common data set that consists of 70,000 grayscale images, and these are just handwritten digits, and it's about
so numerical digits.
Yeah, numerical yeah. digits, and it's about recognizing this handwritten like digits. If you think of postcodes in America yeah. are a very good application, you're automatically identifying what people are writing yeah. down. We're going to use this data set
okay.
And some deep learning techniques to see cool. how we're doing. And the images are 28 by 28 pixels.
Right.
So they're actually quite low resolution. So the demo I wanted to show is in Azure Machine Learning.
Okay,
and Azure Machine Learning has this, not necessarily a language, but it's called NetSHAR. And it's this way of defining neural network architecture. So okay. it's just basically say how many layers and how you want them to be architecture, and the tool is going to run the model behind them.
Okay.
So for the people in the audience that they don't know what Azure Machine Learning is, it's a browser-based tool that you're able to drag and drop some modules and build some interesting machine learning models that you can then publish as APIs, and yeah. people can use them literally everywhere because they're just REST APIs.
Sure. Okay.
Cool. So let's have a look. This is Azure Machine Learning, and it just it looks a little bit busy, but on the left hand side we have all the modules that we can use in this application, okay. And this the bit in the middle is our workspace, is where we actually do all of the machine learning work. And we have two different data sets. We have a trained data set which only contains 60,000 of our images, and we're okay. going to use those images to train our neural network. And then we have 10,000 images set aside to see how our models are doing on unseen data.
So this is important because you want to have a separate set of images to test.
Exactly. Well. Yeah. yeah. You don't want the same images yeah. because you think, oh, the model has seen those before. Yeah. So you're not going to have a taste of how it's going to do when you release it into the wild.
Okay.
So if we right click to see how this data looks like. Cool. As we can see, we have 60,000 rows and 785 yeah. columns.
Okay.
We have 784 columns, which are the pixels that we put through. In this case, we only have two values, is 0 and 1, 0 for white and 1 for black.
Okay.
But if you're using colored image, you'll have three channels, so you'll have RGB okay, most yeah. commonly. And then the last column is what we call a label, and that's what digit we have in each image.
So this is the actual digit.
The actual digit that's written down, and we need that to tell our model what yeah. we wanted to learn in a way. And Azure Machine Learning is very good for this because it gives us a snapshot of the how the data distributed and some very quick statistics to look at. And if we look at the histogram, which is the distribution of the digits,
yeah.
we can see that we have very similar number of examples for each of them. And this is really, really good
yeah.
Because that means we don't have a skewed data set.
Okay.
So what we're actually going to do is we're going to take that image, we're going to put it through a train model. We're going to use a neural network. We're going to score that on the unseen data. And then we're going to look at how we're going to, at the evaluate model, that's just going to show us the accuracy and how well we're being able to discriminate between the different digits.
Okay.
So if we click on the multi-class neural network, this is actually where we define our architecture.
Yep.
And as you can see, it's only three lines of code. Sure. I wouldn't even call it code. It's sort of it's a description of the network. So we have an input picture, and this is our input layer. Then we have a hidden H1 of 200. This is 200 of the computational nodes we looked at before.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's quite a lot, right? It's yeah. not like two or three. It's 100 computation nodes in the first hidden layer, and that's just connected to the outputs and putting through a softmax at the end.
Okay, so what language is this written in?
It's called NetSharp.
So this is a NetSharp script.
It's a NetSharp script. It's a new thing that Azure Machine Learning allows
you
to do.
It seems very kind of readable.
Yeah, it's very readable. Yeah. It's very human interpretable. And then you just click run here, and this would train your network straight away.
Okay.
So I ran this before because it does take a couple of minutes. Sure. But if we right-click visualize on the evaluate model, we're going to see some of the characteristics, the metrics.
Okay.
So the overall accuracy for this model is 97.94%.
So that's pretty good. Though.
That's pretty good.
So how does it know that accuracy? Is that because it's tested against the bit of data, the 10,000 images you reserved at the
Yeah, site? Exactly. Yeah. So we have labels for those, so we know which ones we recognize correctly or not. And then here we have this thing that's called the confusion matrix.
Confusion matrix.
Yeah, it's not there to confuse anyone. It has a funny name. But this matrix basically shows the percentage between the different classes, how they were recognized. Okay. So we can see here that the class 0 was 99.4% recognized as 0, and then 0.1% recognizing the 2, and so on and so forth. And we can see this for each digit. Yeah.
Cool.
So let's see what happens if we just add one more hidden layer. Okay. And that's, again, just one single line of code, and we just say connect hidden two to hidden one, and then the output,
right?
So it's very, very easy to look at that. And then if we right-click visualize, we're gonna see if this improved at all. And it did improve it a tiny little bit.
Sure.
Right. And
so
again,
it's jumped up to what, 98% was that?
Yeah, 98.14%.
Okay.
So it's a tiny bit of a jump. We're not going to talk about if that's statistically significant at all. That's a conversation for another time. But it did seem like it improved a little bit. And then I wanted to add convolution, right? So do you think convolution is going to do better or worse?
I think it's going to do worse.
So it actually depends. Yeah. We'll see what it does in this case, but in some cases it does better, in some cases it does worse.
Okay.
But it's also about this idea of generalizing the model for different type of images. So it's trying to not do something that we call overfitting.
Right,
okay. So overfitting is when you know your training data set really, really, really well, but your model doesn't generalize enough for the specific subject domain you're looking for. So let's see how we can add a convolutional layer. So we have the same line to start with. Just don't forget the constants are just some parameters we defined before. So we have input picture 28 by 28, hidden C1, 512, and this is actually the output, the measures that we have in the output as we go through this layer. So from picture, which is our input layer, we do the convolutional layer. The input shape is 28 by 28, right? So that's what we put through the convolutional layer.
Yep.
The kernel shape is 5 by 5. Remember, we looked at that before.
Sure,
the stride is 2.
So it's skipping 2 bits.
It's skipping 2 bits at a time. Yep. And the map count is 5.
Okay.
Which means we're doing 5 convolutions at the same time. So we have 5 kernels, and then we're doing 5 operation, which results in 5 maps. That's why we have the 5 here. So we have 5 maps, and each map as a resulting of this operation is 12 by 12.
Okay.
And if you calculate it, it's because 20 by 28, take 5 and then move it by 2.
Yeah.
By the time it reaches end and you do that division, you'll see it's 12.
Okay, I'll take your word on that.
Cool, awesome. We don't have time to do that, but that's how it works. And then we repeat that the second time, and this time we're going to have a map count of 10.
Okay.
So we're doing 10 maps. And the end here, we're going to have 50 feature maps of each dimensions 4 by 4. Right?
Okay.
So we see how we took 20 by 20 image, and at the end we have these very small feature maps that we put through a convolutional, a fully connected layer here at the end. A hidden layer of 100, and we do softmax.
Right.
And that's very similar to the picture we looked at.
Yeah.
But as you can notice here, we don't have any max pooling layers yet.
Okay.
We just do the convolutional layers here. So let's see if this actually made any difference. increased or decreased. Okay, so we see that increased it by a little bit.
So it was 9814, it's now 9836.
36, yeah.
More important, that is, that difference.
Yeah. So that would be very, very important if we have millions of images, for example. Yeah. So the last thing I wanted to show you is how we actually do the convolution and the max pooling layer at the same time. And because this is a bit more complicated, we define some of the parameters of the models, but it's very similar. So we have the picture.
So when you're writing this script, is you just write it directly into this interface?
Yes, you do write it directly in this interface. It's very easy to write it here, and it does the, it backs it up very often, so it should be fine for you to write it in there. But this is very similar to what we've seen before in terms of the convolutional layer. You'd have this idea of picture convolve, and then you have your image, the kernel shapes, strides, and we see a new parameter there, which is padding.
Okay.
So we padding true means we actually do a padding around the image. Yeah. So we put zeros on each side in order to have that nice operation around the matrix. And then this is where we do a max pooling layer. And the max pooling layer, again, you just need to define the input shape, the kernel shape. So it's how much of the area you want it to do the maximum for.
Okay.
And again, a stride, if you want to jump while you do that or not. And we repeat that with another convolutional layer, another max pooling layer, and we do the hidden and the soft max at the end, as we've done before. So the bit at the end is sort of common practice for all of them. So if we right click evaluate, let's see if it did better or worse, and we see that it did a little bit better.
So we're on 9889 now.
Yeah, so I actually put a table there.
We don't get over 99 then?
We don't get over 99.
Disappointing, but never mind.
It's almost there, but 99% is very hard to actually reach. And we say that MNIST is a bit of an interesting data set because it does read very high accuracy, even with less sophisticated models, so it's an interesting one to get started with. So if we see in the table, I actually put all of them next to each other to see this progress. So we started at 97.94%, and as we go further and use different techniques, we reach like 98.89, which is a 1% accuracy, which is quite, if you think about it, it's quite significant.
It's better to go 1% up than 1% down, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's always good to go up in some way or another.
Cool.
Well, so this is all I want to tell you. Do you have any questions?
No, that's great. I mean, it's obviously there's a lot of detail there, and I guess getting to learn how these algorithms work is a whole skill in itself. It's not something you can pick up overnight. But if you do want to invest the time learning that, there's tools to help you do it and jump on board with it.
And the best way to do it is just give it a go. Just think about a scenario you want to try out. Get the images or, you know, any other domain you want to apply that for, and go and do it.
So where would somebody go to learn more about this if they wanted to really dive into a bit more detail?
So there's a lot of courses online, but I would say that it's important for people to start with some of the machine learning techniques first, and then move to deep learning. There's a lot of forums, there's a lot of competition, so there's a lot of competition both on Cortana Intelligence Gallery or Kaggle, or there's a lot of different platforms that people can go and learn, and forums. I think the community is very active at the moment.
So this is So get your machine learning skills up to date first. And I know there's a lot of stuff on the Microsoft Virtual Academy around machine learning.
That's a great resource to get going. And then if you're interested in CNTK, for example, there's loads of brilliant tutorials just on GitHub in CNTK that you can just get going. So you have a lot of code samples and different examples that will get you started. And then you can replace bits and bobs, and that's how you can get going.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for
having me. No problem. Good.
So thanks, folks. I hope that was interesting. Join us next week for another topic on introducing AI.